Holly Jackson's Good Girl, Bad Blood has captivated millions of readers worldwide since its 2020 release, becoming an instant New York Times bestseller and cultural phenomenon. The sequel to the wildly successful A Good Girl's Guide to Murder continues Pip Fitzsimmobi's journey as an amateur detective, this time with a podcast audience following her investigation. The series has gained massive popularity on BookTok, with over 2 billion views of related content, and has been praised by celebrities like Florence Pugh, who is set to star in the upcoming BBC adaptation. What makes this thriller so compelling is how it blends modern technology with classic mystery elements, while exploring the psychological toll of pursuing justice at any cost. As one reader put it, Jackson doesn't just write mysteries. She writes about what happens when ordinary people are pushed to their breaking points. Pip Fitzsimmobi is haunted by the voices of those she once trusted, their words echoing through her sleepless nights with devastating clarity. She obsessively replays her interview with Elliot Ward, analyzing every inflection, every pause, every subtle shift in his expression, searching for any hint of deception she might have missed in the man she once saw as a father figure. Her investigation into Andy Bell's murder had exposed uncomfortable truths about her town and herself, transforming Little Kilton from a picturesque suburb into a landscape of secrets and lies. The phantom sounds of her dog Barney's claws clicking on the hardwood floor, a faithful companion who died protecting her during the investigation, serve as constant reminders of the price of seeking justice. Sometimes she catches herself turning at the sound, only to remember he's gone. Despite the trauma, or perhaps because of it, Pip has channeled her experience into a 6-episode podcast titled A Good Girl's Guide to Murder. The podcast meticulously documents the Andy Bell case that mainstream media continues to misrepresent, focusing on sensational headlines rather than the complex truth she uncovered. With all release forms signed, even by Elliot Ward from his maximum security cell, and hundreds of hours of audio editing complete, she's ready to share her story with the world. Each episode represents both a personal exorcism and a public record, a way to reclaim her narrative while processing the events that transformed her from an ambitious student into someone intimately acquainted with darkness. The ripple effects of her investigation have touched every member of her family. Her younger brother Josh, inspired by her success but naive to its cost, now plays amateur detective at school, investigating missing lunch money and stolen pencil cases. Pip finds herself constantly pulling him back, warning him with trembling hands about the dangers of this path. "People get hurt when you play detective," she tells him firmly, Barney's fate weighing heavily in her words. Meanwhile, she must regularly face Max Hastings in court, enduring his predatory gaze from the defendants' backs while his expensive defense team attempts to discredit her testimony. They paint her as an attention-seeking teenager with an aggressive feminist agenda, trying to twist her thorough investigation into a vendetta. Through these challenges, Ravi Singh, brother of the wrongfully accused Saul, remains her unwavering anchor. Their relationship, forged in the crucible of shared trauma and justice-seeking, has evolved into something deeper than either expected. His distinctive knock pattern, 3 quick taps followed by 2 slow ones, now makes her heart race for entirely different reasons than the fear that once dominated her life. Together, they meticulously record podcast updates about Max's trial, fighting for justice in a system that seems designed to protect the privileged and powerful. The aftermath isn't just about solving a mystery, it's about learning to live with the knowledge that truth comes at a price, and that sometimes the most difficult part isn't uncovering secrets, but living with them afterward. 6 months after solving Andy Bell's murder, Pip finds herself drawn into another investigation when Jamie Reynolds vanishes after a memorial service for Sal and Andy. Despite her initial reluctance, "I can't do this again," she tells Connor Reynolds when he first asks for help. Pip feels compelled to act when the police classify Jamie as merely absent rather than missing due to his adult status and history of disappearing. The memorial itself had been a poignant affair, with hundreds gathering around the pavilion. Ravi's father, Mohan, gave a touching speech about Sal, revealing his son's love for the movie Babe and playing his favorite song as the crowd joined in clapping and singing. The Sings released a lantern for Sal, while Jason and Don Bell released one for Andy, both lanterns rising into the night sky as Pip watched them disappear among the stars. It was during this emotional moment that Jamie was last seen, looking distracted as he pushed through the crowd around 8:10 p.m. Jamie's disappearance presents a complex puzzle. His mother, Joanna, reveals he makes fierce one-on-one friendships, and his closest friend currently is Nat Da Silva. They bonded over being on the periphery of the Andy Bell case and both struggling after leaving university early. Jamie had romantic feelings for Nat and was devastated when she got a new boyfriend in early March. Despite this, they remained friends, with Jamie often texting and calling her late at night. The investigation quickly reveals troubling patterns. Jamie had been acting strangely for weeks, coming home late, oversleeping, being short-tempered. His brother Connor shares that Jamie has been sneaking out late at night over the past 2 weeks. Most significantly, Jamie had a major argument with their father just before the memorial, where his dad called him a waste of space. The family dynamics add layers of complexity to the case, with Pip noting Arthur Reynolds' puzzling absence during the investigation. As Pip reluctantly takes on this new case, she finds herself creating a new podcast season, The Disappearance of Jamie Reynolds, documenting her search for the truth. Despite her mother's concerns about her getting involved in another dangerous investigation, Pip feels responsible to help find Jamie. With her father's support, her mother reluctantly accepts Pip's decision, but sets strict conditions: no obsession, no missing school, and immediate notification if there's any hint of danger. The investigation into Jamie's disappearance reveals a complex web of digital deception. Through meticulous examination of social media posts, party photos, and videos, Pip pieces together Jamie's movements on the night he vanished. A crucial breakthrough comes when Kara mentions seeing Jamie at a party on Friday night after the memorial. Though skeptical at first, Pip confirms with the host, Stephen Thompson, that Jamie was indeed there around 9 to 10 p.m., described as just standing there, watching, without talking to anyone. Witness George provides a recorded testimony revealing Jamie was on a tense phone call outside the party at 10:32 p.m., saying things like, "I can't do that," and mentioning police and a child before walking away toward the high street. In party photos, they find Jamie in the background at 9:38 p.m., jaw tense, watching someone. Their theory develops. Jamie spotted someone at the memorial and followed them to the party. The investigation takes a dramatic turn when Pip discovers Jamie was catfished by someone using Stella Chapman's Instagram photos. After spotting Stella at the memorial, Jamie had followed her to the party thinking she was Layla, only to discover the devastating truth when confronting her. Stella feels bad about her reaction now that she understands Jamie wasn't being creepy but had just discovered he'd been deceived. Through persistent digital detective work, Pip and Connor eventually uncover Layla, spelled with A-Y, who uses edited, blonde versions of Stella's photos. Her Instagram, at LeleMelaMead, reveals she's Layla Mead with 503 followers, including Jamie. The account was created February 17th, aligning with when Jamie started seeming happier. When they attempt to message Layla, she immediately responds with, "Hello, Pip," and "You're getting closer," before deactivating all her accounts, a chilling exchange confirming Layla knows something about Jamie's disappearance. The digital breadcrumbs extend to Jamie's Fitbit data, which reveals crucial information. Jamie walked 1,828 steps after his last sighting at 11:40 p.m., continuing until midnight. His heart rate steadily increased during this time, spiking to 126 BPM during a brief period when he wasn't moving, then to 158 BPM just before 12:30 a.m., when the data suddenly flatlines. This technological evidence provides the most ominous clue yet about what might have happened to Jamie. As Pip delves deeper into Jamie's disappearance, she uncovers layers of secrets that paint a more complex picture than initially apparent. The Reynolds family harbors their own hidden truths. Jamie had been fired from Procter & Radcliffe 2 weeks earlier after being caught stealing the company credit card. He had claimed it was life or death and appeared desperate, but gave no further explanation. Despite being fired, Jamie had been pretending to go to work every day, hiding his termination from his family. A search of Jamie's bedroom reveals more mysteries: a women's pink and rose gold watch that neither his mother nor brother recognize, and a cryptic note with "Hillary F. Wiseman, left 11" written on it. Research reveals this woman died in 2006, leading Pip to investigate her grave in the local cemetery as a possible meeting spot. Jamie's browser history reveals searches about brain cancer and making money quickly, connecting to his attempt to steal Pip's mother's credit card. His final Instagram messages to Lila show he had been catfishing her first, claiming to be 29, working as a portfolio manager, and living alone. After Jamie's confession about his true identity, Lila ignores him for 3 days until he desperately promises to do anything for her. The investigation takes another turn when Pip discovers a knife missing from the Reynolds kitchen, the yellow-banded one that was present in a photo from Jamie's birthday but now gone. This particular knife would be the one most suitable as a weapon, raising alarming questions about Jamie's intentions or what might have happened to him. Perhaps most disturbing is the pattern Pip notices among Lila's contacts, all men around 30 with similar appearances. This suggests Lila is searching for someone specific, leading Pip to a shocking realization. Lila is hunting for Child Brunswick, the now 29, 30-year-old son of notorious serial killer Scott Brunswick, who helped lure victims 20 years ago. Every man Lila contacted fits this age profile. After researching online, despite a worldwide injunction protecting Child Brunswick's identity, they find scattered rumors about his relocations and false identifications. A crucial breakthrough comes when Pip discovers a 4chan comment claiming Child Brunswick lives in Little Clinton, their town. This connects to photos Pip took showing Stanley Forbes paying Howie Bowers, with Howie threatening to tell if not paid. The shocking truth emerges. Stanley Forbes, the local newspaper editor, is Child Brunswick, living under a new identity. The line between justice and vengeance blurs dramatically as Pip's investigation progresses. Her righteous anger builds throughout the story, particularly regarding Max Hastings' trial. Despite her testimony and evidence, Max is found not guilty on all charges, devastating both Pip and his victims. When she delivers this news to Nat DeSilva, Nat breaks down screaming, a reaction that haunts Pip throughout the day. The injustice of Max walking free becomes a turning point for Pip. She receives a screenshot from Naomi showing Max celebrating his not guilty verdict with champagne at the Savoy, pushing her toward a crucial decision. After a conversation with her neighbor Charlie Green, who tells her, "Justice exists, maybe not the kind that happens in police stations and courtrooms," Pip realizes she doesn't need to be likable or feel ashamed of who she is. "Maybe I don't have to be good, or other people's versions of good," she thinks. This realization leads to direct action. Pip uploads the audio confession where Max Hastings admits to drugging and raping Becca Bell, posting it to her website and Twitter with the message, "Max Hastings trial, final update. I don't care what the jury believes, he is guilty." Then she takes paint and a hammer from her car, approaches the Hastings empty house, and paints, "Rapist, I will get you," across the front door before smashing all 6 front windows. The culmination of Pip's transformation comes in her confrontation with Stanley Forbes. After discovering he is Child Brunswick and that Jamie had attacked him with a knife after identifying him, Pip faces a moral dilemma. Stanley reveals he's been trying to live a quiet life and unlearn the toxic behaviors from his past, though he still feels guilt over his father's crimes. The situation escalates tragically when Charlie Green arrives and shoots Stanley, killing him. In the aftermath, Pip arranges Stanley's funeral since no one else claimed him. When protesters arrive with signs declaring "Killer Spawn" and "Charlie Green equals hero," Pip charges at them, screaming, "He's dead! Leave him alone!" and breaking signs before being restrained. Her defense of Stanley, a man with a horrific past who was trying to change, represents the complex moral landscape she now inhabits, where justice, vengeance, and redemption exist in uneasy tension. The personal toll of Pip's investigations forms a central theme throughout the narrative. From the beginning, we see how her previous case has left lasting psychological scars, the phantom sounds of her dead dog's claws on the floor, the holes in her concentration that didn't exist before, the obsessive replaying of Elliot Ward's interview recording. These symptoms suggest post-traumatic stress that Pip hasn't fully processed. As she reluctantly takes on Jamie's case, the costs continue to mount. Her academic performance suffers as she prioritizes the investigation over schoolwork, despite her mother's concerns about her Cambridge prospects. Her relationships become strained. She pushes away Ravi despite his attempts to comfort her, saying, "I need to save Jamie," while ignoring her own needs and the people who care about her. The investigation's toll extends beyond Pip's mental health to her social standing. When Wired Rip publishes an article claiming Jamie's disappearance is a hoax orchestrated by Pip and the Reynolds siblings for podcast fame, she faces widespread suspicion and ridicule. She finds a threatening note in her locker saying, "This is your final warning, Pippa. Walk away," and encounters hostility from former friends like Aunt, who insinuates she's fabricated the entire situation. The pressure culminates in a violent outburst when Pip shoves Aunt into lockers and pins him with her forearm against his throat, resulting in a 3-day suspension from school. This incident reveals how the accumulated stress has eroded her self-control and further isolates her from her community. Perhaps most significantly, the investigation forces Pip to confront uncomfortable truths about herself. She admits to Ravi that she's been lying to herself about who she is, confessing she's selfish, a liar, reckless, and obsessive, but it feels like me. This self-recognition represents both a cost and a form of growth. She's lost the innocence of believing herself purely good, but gained a more complex understanding of her own identity. By the story's end, Pip carries the psychological weight of witnessing Stanley's murder. The sound of gunshots continues echoing in her mind, following her home and into her bed, refusing to leave. The gun that took Stanley's life now lives inside her, present in every sound, every moment, a constant companion she cannot escape. This final cost suggests that some wounds never fully heal. They simply become part of who we are. Throughout the narrative, truth remains frustratingly elusive as characters weave intricate webs of deception to protect themselves and others. From the opening scene where Pip obsessively replays Elliot Ward's interview, analyzing every micro-expression, pause, and verbal tick for hints of dishonesty, to the final devastating revelation about Stanley Forbes' hidden identity, the story meticulously explores the complex layers that separate truth from falsehood in modern society. Jamie's disappearance forms the central mystery, itself wrapped in multiple layers of deception. For months, he maintained an elaborate charade of employment, meticulously leaving the house each morning in business attire, spending hours in coffee shops to maintain the illusion, and fabricating workplace stories for his family. His online relationship with Lila revealed another dimension of his deceptions. He created a fictional persona, shaving years off his age and inventing a more successful career trajectory. Meanwhile, Lila orchestrated an even more sophisticated deception, using stolen photographs from multiple social media accounts, crafting detailed backstories, and employing sophisticated psychological manipulation techniques to target vulnerable men. The investigation becomes increasingly murky as witnesses contribute their own false narratives. Tom Nowak fabricates a sighting of Jamie at Nat's house, deliberately misleading Pip to gain followers and internet notoriety. His false testimony sends the investigation down time-wasting rabbit holes and undermines legitimate leads. Luke Eaton's initial lies about his whereabouts create similar complications. While Arthur's strategic withholding of information about Jamie's request for £900, a sum that exactly matches known payments to catfishing victims, delays crucial connections. Institutional failures compound the challenge of uncovering truth. the justice system's inability to convict Max Hastings, despite DNA evidence and multiple victim testimonies, demonstrates how legal truth can diverge from factual reality. The police department's bureaucratic decision to classify Jamie as absent rather than missing, despite clear evidence of concerning behavior patterns and financial irregularities, reveals how institutional procedures can obscure rather than illuminate truth. Media outlets further muddy the waters, with the Wired Rip article's sensational claims about a manufactured disappearance demonstrating how truth becomes currency in the attention economy. In this environment of pervasive deception, Pip's journey becomes as much about epistemology, the nature of truth itself, as about solving a missing persons case. Her investigation methods evolve from naive faith in direct testimony to a more sophisticated understanding of how truth must be assembled from multiple sources, cross-referenced, and verified. Her own self-deception gradually becomes apparent as she confronts her darker impulses and capacity for manipulation, culminating in her confession to Ravi, "I've been lying to myself about who I am." The story ultimately suggests that truth exists not as an absolute, but as a careful construction built from fragments of evidence, testimony, and deduction. Pip's methodical approach, recording interviews, maintaining detailed evidence boards, cross-referencing accounts, and analyzing patterns, represents an attempt to build reliable knowledge in an unreliable world. The truth she eventually uncovers about Stanley Forbes and Jamie's fate proves far more complex than initially imagined, challenging simple moral categorizations and revealing how truth, like human nature itself, resists easy classification into black and white. The story concludes not with neat resolution, but with characters learning to live with the aftermath of trauma and revelation. At Jamie's barbecue, Pip reminds him that his father truly loves him, despite not always showing it properly. They make a promise to each other to live well for Stanley, who no longer can. Jamie reveals plans to become a trainee paramedic and to finally tell Nat about his feelings for her, signs of healing and moving forward despite what he's been through. For Pip, however, the path forward remains more complicated. Though she laughs watching everyone attempt to floss dance at the barbecue, she remains separate, content to observe from a distance with Ravi beside her. Later that night, alone in her darkened room, she searches online for sightings of Charlie and Flora Green, meticulously documenting leads. Charlie's voice haunts her thoughts as she wonders if they truly are different. The gun that took Stanley's life now lives inside her, present in every sound, every moment, a constant companion she cannot escape. This ending suggests that while some wounds heal, others become part of who we are. Jamie can move forward with new purpose, but Pip remains caught between worlds, present with her friends and family, yet simultaneously haunted by what she's witnessed. Her continued search for Charlie Green indicates she hasn't fully let go of the case or its implications. The contrast between Jamie's healing and Pip's ongoing struggle highlights different responses to trauma. Jamie, despite being kidnapped and manipulated, finds a way to integrate his experience and use it as motivation for a helping profession. Pip, despite solving the case and saving Jamie, carries the psychological burden of Stanley's murder and her own moral compromises. Perhaps most significantly, the story ends with questions rather than answers about Pip's future. Will she continue investigating cases despite the personal cost? Can she reconcile her self-image as not good with her desire to help others? Will the psychological echoes of the gunshots ever fade? These unresolved questions suggest that living with the aftermath is not about finding perfect closure, but about continuing to navigate complex moral and emotional terrain while carrying the weight of what we've experienced.